Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. It's the People's Radio. It's all that G up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo! Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like this. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
It don't get no more realer. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. This is the People's Radio. And yes, you are on right now with the Renegades. You could have been anywhere in the world this evening, but you chose to be here with us. And we appreciate the patriots.
Baby.
Yes, sir. So, as we get into the proceedings this evening, allow me to introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer. And to my right, I have my man, 100 grand, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
What's up? It's good to have the Game Changer back. He's like the point forward. You know, he's that guy that can look over the defense and catch you in the post. So I feel good. I feel like I slide to my position. You know, I'll play point when I need to, but, you know, I like to get to that corner and spot up, you know, kind of Perkins style. I'm right-handed with the left, so.
Big smooth.
Ready to go, baby.
Big smooth. Big smooth, ready to go, holding him down. Now, to my left, I got my man, Phil T. Sports, PhD. What's happening, Captain?
We got the band back together. The band is back together. Now, you know that line,
yeah.
Like one of my favorite lines from the movie. What's the movie with Sam Jackson and Bernie Mac? Soul Man?
Soul Man.
Hey, man, I'm trying to get the band back together. I'm about to go on
these
big old
dates. Hey, we like the five
heartbeats.
You like the five heartbeats, except there's only three of us.
And Marcus, did you call yourself the seventh Jackson in the intro?
I did.
I love it. And at the end of the day,
we gotta have a little fun around here.
At the end of the day, I'm present. That's what I am.
As usual, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. We have a slamming show for you all tonight. So just sit back, relax. We're going to hold you down. Again, the Real Sports Guys is brought to you by Resistance Digital. Head over to resistancedigital.com to get all your digital needs met. They're going to hook you up with a real fly price, and you're going to get state-of-the-art equipment on the cheap. So make sure you check out our guy LR, Larry Randall, over with Resistance Digital. Now, this portion of the show is called the intro to let them know, and we finna let you know. This is where we run down everything that we have in store for you all for the next 2 hours. So let me run through things real quick. We have an RSG staple, the Funky Editorial. Tonight's edition of the Funky Editorial, we are going to break down the Shaq, Dwight Howard beef that is brewing. A lot of questions around that. Shaq made some comments. Dwight Howard made some comments. We're going to get into all the specifics in the Funky Editorial. So make sure you check that out. Begin to kind of whet your appetite for the NBA season as it quickly approaches. Then we're going to talk about NFL Week 5. Quickly recap all of the action. Talk about a few games. Give you some impressive performers. You know how we do. Then we're each going to be going through and giving you our top 25 NBA players going into the 2012-13 season. I will debut my 25 through 21, so I'll give you my bottom five of my top 25. So be on the lookout for that. Then we're going to hit you with the five on the black-hand side where we're going to get into the MLB Divisional Series. We're going to talk a lot of MLB playoffs. So that'll be where we'll give you that during the five on the black-hand side. And then we're going to get into Onions. All right, Onions is a new segment for long-time listeners. This is where the Renegades give you two bold predictions for the upcoming sports week. Make sure you be on the lookout for that. Then we're going to talk some NCAA football to close out. We're going to talk about the top five teams in the country. Each of us will give you our top five right now as we kind of hit the halfway point of the NCAA football season, our Heisman front runner. And then we're going to get into some we're going to put on our Nicodemus turbans and break out the crystal ball and at least a magic eight ball or something and see if we can predict some of the big, big upcoming college football matches this weekend. We'll hit you with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, and then we'll go into shutdown mode and close this bad boy out. So, one of my favorite lines, I leave you with one of my favorite lines from the movie, The Program. You guys remember the movie, The Program?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the greatest football movies, at least in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. Let's go.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Now, this week's edition of the Funky Editorial, we're going to get into Shaq's comments. Shaquille O'Neal made some comments about Dwight Howard. Now, this has been a beef that has been brewing over time. You have two players who both started their careers in the same city, play the same position, even donned the same nickname, Superman. It took a turn this summer with Dwight Howard going to the Lakers, further following in Shaq's footsteps. Shaq came out, and he's been critical of Dwight Howard quite often now that he is in the booth and not playing. So he took it a step further, saying that Dwight Howard is not the best true center. And I want to make sure I emphasize the word true. He's not the best true center in the NBA in the sense that he doesn't play with his back to the basket. Shaq cited that Andrew Bynum, and he first said Robin Lopez, but then corrected himself and got the right Lopez brother and said Brooke Lopez were better true centers. And that Dwight Howard was more of a pick-and-roll player and more of an athlete than a true center. So I'm going to toss this one to the vet post player, my man D. Wills. Is there any truth to those comments? Why don't you take that on?
You know, I struggle with this because I think Dwight was correct in pointing out to Shaq that Shaq didn't like it when folks made some of these same criticisms of his game and his effort, and, you know, some of the retired players came back and doing it. And I understand that he has his role as an analyst, but there's no way in the world that I'm going to put Bynum and Brooke Lopez ahead of Dwight. One thing is about, we talked about, we are, and we are as much on Dwight as anybody on the airway. So we come from that perspective. Hell, we got a picture of him in a Globetrotter uniform on our website.
Right.
So
right.
we are on him as much as, but the one thing we all will admit is that nobody's ever questioned how hard he plays on that night. He might be bad in interviews. He might not never say the right thing to handle a situation. We could be critical of that. But in between the lines, he does it, and he's been doing it on both ends. His game is developed offensively, that he's added some pieces to his game, much more so than Shaq's game developed offensively over time. But the other thing is, and what I was always critical of I thought about Shaq's game, is that he's also dominant as a rebounder and a defender. And I don't know if Shaq ever led the league in rebounding at all, but Dwight is always up there as a dominant rebounder, those efforts. And so, you know, I felt like it was unwarranted. You can make an argument for Bynum, but Bynum doesn't come and play every night like Dwight. Dwight plays every night. He might not say the right things when he gets in front of the microphone, but I don't know if anybody can question his effort every night.
Well said, well said. And I agree. If I have to pick a center to have my back defensively, I'm picking Dwight Howard. We've been critical. I've been very critical of Dwight. Again, how he handles himself. But as far as his play, you're right. Defensively, dominant player. Rebounding, the rebounding aspect of the game, very dominant. Offensively, he's developing. He's still developing. He's still a work in progress. Will we ever get there? Who knows? But he's improved. My initial thought was, okay, Bynum, maybe you can have a conversation. There are some things that Bynum does better than Dwight Howard. But as far as that, as you said, the motor, Bynum's motor runs hot and cold a lot. I think there was a point during last season where Bynum was consistently bringing it on a night-in, night-out basis, and I think he had really thrust himself into that conversation where you could actually have a conversation about it. And there were some people who would even put him ahead of Dwight Howard. But I think the things that Dwight Howard does on the defensive end, he does them better than, leaps and bounds better than anybody else as far as a big. And then even bringing in a Lopez period. I don't care which one it is. to bring in a Lopez period, just, you know, PAZ, did this hurt Shaq's credibility at all as an analyst, in your opinion?
It's a great question. I'm going to say no, because if anything, I think it's adding credibility to his willingness to be critical, even on hot topics. You know, Devon, I think you said the magic word. You know, he's an analyst. This is kind of what he needs to do. So if he wasn't an analyst and he was just walking around the club and, you know, you had him on tape saying this, yeah, I'd be a little bit more critical. But this is what he get paid to do, man, is analyze NBA players, specifically guys that played in the same position he played in. So I don't necessarily have a problem. I think that it's a very sexy topic because there are so many parallels, you know, that, you know, what Devon and you talked about in terms of, you know, Magic, the Lakers, and Superman. And by the way, man, there's like 500 superheroes. Couldn't they get another one? I mean, it's enough to go around, man. Both of y'all cats ain't got to be Superman. Goodness. You know. But
I mean, the Hulk. Take the Hulk.
Take something. You know, goodness. but that's my take on it, man.
So I want to follow up with you right now, PhD. So Dwight fired back. You know, he said the basic sentiments of his statements were, you know, you had your time, it's over, and you need to move on. Now, again, when we are critical of Dwight, it's usually in situations like this where he just doesn't say the right thing. In this situation, did he give the right answer?
No, I don't think it's a no-win situation for Dwight. Even though a lot of people are agreeing with what he said, it makes sense, but, you know, Jay-Z once said, don't argue with a dummy. Don't argue with an idiot. Because from the distance, you can't tell who's who. I mean, man, we all know Shaq is like two levels away from being Charles Barkley. Shaq says stuff for shock value. I got a new nickname. Okay, Shaq, that was cool 10 years ago, but you still doing it. I mean, Shaq just does this stuff to try to stay relevant, man. I wouldn't try to get sucked up into it because at the end of the day, he's an analyst. He's got a microphone in front of him every night. And he can say whatever he wants to say, and people, you know, it keeps him relevant. It keeps him in the news. Where Dwight Howard, man, you got to manage your impressions a lot better. And it's a no-win situation for you to go back and forth with Shaq.
Yeah, and again, it kind of speaks to one of the critiques that we have as RSG of the kind of current NBA elites with the rabbit ears, you know. Guys, they have their antenna up a little too high, and they picking up on too many things, and some stuff you just got to let go off your back. Now, you know the media is going to bring it up, and you have to be prepared when you're out front and center to be able to handle these kind of questions in a way that doesn't detract from your swag. You know, you got to have your grown man stance. You got to take a grown man stance, and you kind of got to put yourself out there in a way that, you know, you're going to get respect from guys like us. And some of these cats, it's hard for them to do that because they are sensitive. These are guys that have grown up with everybody agreeing with them, with everybody liking them, with everybody kind of kowtowing to them. And so when somebody disagrees with them, they really have a hard time handling that. They haven't had that. They haven't had those playground battles like we all had growing up where, you know, the cat's coming at you, trying to roast, and you got to strike back real quick and witty-like. They didn't really come up on that. Nobody really tested the 6'10" dude in ninth grade. Not to his face.
But I would say this was the one time that I was happy Dwight said it. You know, just that was just like, you know, that was a step off me line. Now, what he does from here, you know, I think he should just say, I said what I said, we're going to keep it moving. But
yeah.
I felt like he had to have one of them step off lines. You know, because we all knew it was ridiculous. You can argue the Bynum piece, but when you start bringing in Lopez, you have lost your credibility. You could have brought in Marcus Shaw. You could have brought in – I know he talked about back to the basket. I know that's a big thing. But you could have brought in Marcus Shaw. You might have had more validity with Marcus Shaw. You could have brought
Al Horford.
I mean, you could – well, you bring Lopez in. Not to say he's not a great player, but he's not somebody that I see as an impact player. The one thing you can say about Dwight is that even though his offensive game isn't where it needs to be, he commands attention on both ends of the floor in a way that Bynum doesn't always do. So what people are going to respect him is when the problem is he doesn't say anything good about Dwight. Now, that's got to be a problem. I don't ever hear him really say anything positive, and you can't have a player that dominant at some point not say something positive about him. I think that's where his credibility becomes a factor.
I mean, even I give him kudos from time to time.
Yeah, you do.
That's a stretch. Well, I got a question for you fellas. This off script.
Go with
here. You know, I'm not gonna pick the mid '80s. When you had Kareem and Olajuwon and Moses Malone, I'm not even gonna go there. I'm gonna look at 1992. I'm gonna name the top four centers who played in the All-Star game. For the East, Pat Ewing, Brad Doherty. In the West, David Robinson, Mutombo, and Olajuwon. And arguably, all these guys were pretty much in their primes.
Does Dwight Howard make that All-Star team in the East or the West? Ewing, Doherty, Mutombo, Olajuwon, and Robinson.
I'd say probably not. Because the other thing you got to think about is, you know, you had Ewing, Robinson, Olajuwon, Mutombo, Doherty. You got a young Alonzo Mourning. I think that was Alonzo's rookie year. And I think he was like 18-10 his first season. You have a guy like Rick Smits. Even if you look at a guy like Kevin Willis, who at that time was a pretty dominant big man, he wasn't dominant like, you know, the rest of those guys on that list. But if you look at his numbers from that season, he held it down. I'm trying to pull it up right now.
Well, yeah, in 92, you probably did you have Duckworth?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Duckworth. I think I'd take Dwight Howard over Duck.
But even if you put Duckworth in this group, he might move to number three today. I mean,
right.
I get you. There was much more depth back then, but the game was also played with a little more emphasis to the post.
Yeah, I mean, you got Kevin Willis averaging 15 rebounds a game that season. Would he make those All-Star teams? I'm likely to say no. Mutombo, I think, was just as dominant defensively. You know, Robinson. I mean, in 92, what did Robinson lead? Robinson led the league in blocks. He averaged 4.5 blocks a game. Akeem came in second with 4.3. Larry Nance came in third with 3. Patrick Ewing came in fourth with 3. Dikembe averaged 3. I think what Dwight averaged like 2.8 last season. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
but
he wouldn't even crack the top five in shot blocking.
But also, fewer cats didn't even come in to pay like that.
I disagree.
I mean, it's much more.
I disagree.
Like
it's so easy for cats to get into the lane today.
Nah,
because they can't put their hands on you.
Yeah, but it's a lot more.
With the pick and roll.
Yeah, but think about the number of times he's getting called for a foul, block. That's a block that back then would have just been a block in a body.
But it's not like Dwight's foul rate is ridiculous. He's not getting fouled. He's not fouling out of games.
Yeah, but
I'm not fouling him out of games.
And you got to think about which team you putting Dwight on back then. So insert him in the team, and how effective would he be? Whose squad you putting him on?
I ain't putting him on nobody.
That's what I'm saying.
He could be on the Orlando Magic. They was around.
Yeah, I mean, so who was on the Magic back then? You know,
I don't even know. Let me take a look.
Because you got to put it in.
Stanley Ray guy.
With Anthony Mason, and you know what he was doing, fouling. You know, come on now. You got Mad Max down in Houston scaring people. I mean, we got to put some stuff in context. Folks was running away from Mad Max to the King. You know, let's put, you know.
Well, let's fast forward a year. Let's fast forward a year. 93. Shaq, the 93 All-Star team in the East. Shaq, Doherty, Ewing. I don't think he's making that team. In the West, Hakeem, Danny Manning, and David Robinson.
He might make it in the West over Danny Manning.
I don't know. He still might not beat out Mutombo. That's the thing. Mutombo was left off. At that point, Mutombo was, you know, he was probably 30, but he was just in his, like, second or third year. You know, Dikembe played, dude. He was 50. He knows that, but we never knew that. So, I mean, and again, then you got Zoe, you still got Deke. It would have been thick. Again, I've said it a bunch of times, and I think right now, you know, PhD is putting it out there on Front Street, but he probably would have been the fifth or sixth best center during that era.
But that might be true in a number of positions.
That's
people that you say are stars here today.
I'd say the only other position is shooting guard. That's the only other position. The shooting guard is weak right now.
Who were the points back then?
The point guards back then?
In that game, you had Isaiah, Dumars, Mark Price in the East. In the West, you had Stockton, Hardaway, Timmy Hardaway, Terry Porter. Terry Porter replaced Mitch Richmond. I mean, Terry Porter just didn't get voted in, okay?
Right. I would take a Chris. Chris Paul would be one of the top five point guards.
Oh, yeah.
Derrick Rose would be one of the top five point guards. It would be close, but I think they would be closer than Dwight would be. Dwight would be hanging out with the Kevin Willises of the world at that point, man.
I mean, you're talking about a golden era of centers, too. I mean, think about that. You're talking about golden era of centers from about 80.
Yes.
What,
and what I'm saying is that's the era that we used to define the dominant big man.
Yeah.
And because that's our measuring stick, we try to call him a dominant big man when he don't even fit in that era. He wouldn't have dominated that era.
But you're asking about who he is today. And
today,
based on who a center is, he's the dominant big man. You know,
but what does it give you? What does that matter?
It gives you more than Brooks Lopez, and it gives you more than Andrew in this conversation.
Well, most nights you don't really need him. Because the other team ain't got no center. I think it's more important to be strong at the wing spot, because every night you're going up against a legit wing, or you're going up against a real PG.
But our argument here is about Shaq talking about where he fits with centers. Is Shaq know he lying? Ain't no way in the world. When he said Lopez, he knew he was lying. So I put this in
at that point,
lying.
It was like, okay, Shaq got the gas face right there.
He lost it. That's not like saying TM Don is the top five group of hip hop all time. Shaq, he lost it.
Brooke Lopez is on the level of TM Don.
Yeah,
you only get that analysis on the Real Sports Guys. A Brooke Lopez PM Dawn comparison.
That's all I'm trying to say. He tried to do this preemptive move. I think it was a preemptive move, because if Lakers mess around and go on a little run and win some championships, I think it was one of his preemptive moves to kind of secure his legacy as a Lakers center. I think that's one of them preemptive moves. He ain't gonna never come out and say it.
I'm gonna throw my next question out. Preemptive assumes, when you say preemptive, it assumes that there are moves to follow. Is this gonna continue to go on all season?
Yeah, he gonna keep. Because to me, you gotta listen hard. Start putting checks. How many positive things have he has to say? How many negatives?
Yeah.
If his negatives is way too long, and he only got a couple positives, you know that's crazy. And at that point, you come on. Come on, man.
If it gets bad, do you see Magic at some point calling out Shaq? Like, come on, Shaq.
you
got to lay
no
off thing. With Dwight.
Kobe might come out and say something.
I mean, we saw this coming, though. You know, I think we all saw this coming. And you know I've said it. That was one of the reasons I didn't think Dwight would wind up in L.A. Early on in his whole situation, as far as him going there on his own terms. I didn't think it was going to happen, because I think he wanted to avoid this particular instance right here, where Shaq was already coming at him about stealing the Superman moniker. And you're right, PhD. It's like seven. Pick up a comic book, man. Close your eyes at this point.
Right.
He got superpowers. Just roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go with Iron Man or something. You know, you can come up with something.
So PhD has been taking us back in time, and he's been kind of schooling us a little bit. I want you to take it one step further You know, Shaq said that he wasn't a true center, a center in the true sense of the term. What's a true center in PhD's book?
I don't have facts to back this up.
But that's not going to stop me, though. So here's my philosophy. If it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So my definition of a true center is that we just take out the word true. And I'm calling the center any guy who can guard a five and or it takes a five to guard him. Okay? And so in a lot of ways, a lot of guys like Chris Bosh, I consider him a five now. You know, Kevin Love, I consider him a five. So, that's how I define centers today. Guys who can guard fives or have to be guarded by fives.
Wait. Kevin Love's a five? By your definition, he doesn't have to be checked by a five.
Well,
you can put a four on him and be fine. He's still going to get 26 either way. It's not like if you put a five on him, it's going to slow him down. Because he's hanging out. He could take him outside.
Well, I think you can. A lot of the fives now can be guarded by fours as well. It can be considered fours as well. So,
and that's what we're trying to get at. What's the difference between a four who's just playing the five and a true five?
Well, a true five, you know me, I came up with two different lists.
Oh,
and they go for your list.
We gave you too much time to prepare.
I came up with two lists. I came up with a true five. Okay, we're going to call it real hip-hop and not something else. And then I came up with guys by the D. Newell, the PhD definition. If it walk like a duck, well, I won't go through the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, if he can guard a five or a five has to guard him, you know, that's what I'm going to call a five. So my true fives, and I'm going to go Ewing style. Okay, Pat Ewing, he couldn't guard nobody but a five. He couldn't even guard a 4.9. Okay, he had to be guarding. he had to be guarding the five. So in that respect, I'm going to go Al Jefferson as the fifth best five, Brooke Lopez as the fourth best. I'm going KG at three. Bynum at two, and Dwight Howard at one. If I'm going overall guys that play the position, it changes up a little bit for me. I'm going David Lee at five, Bynum at four, KG at three, Kevin Love at two, and D12 at one.
Mm. Okay. Hey, them your list. You answered my question. Okay, you gave me your D-Wills, your turn. Define your true center and then give me your top five right now.
I'm still trying to struggle with D. Newell's new true five. Walk like a duck. Right, threw my whole list off. But what I would say, the true five today has the ability to dominate in a couple different spots on the floor that centers used to do. That someone like a David Robinson, Olajuwon, some of the folks we talked about were able to do in two or three categories. Today they might dominate in two of them. They might not, but one, you know what you got to command. And part of that is being able, they play most of their stuff a lot of times in that block or even stepping away, maybe 10 to, you know, they score maybe from the block to 10 feet out for the most part. They can go beyond that, but a lot of their points will do that. Or they're the defensive anchor. Clearly, you're funneling stuff to them, and they command, and where they dominate, it shows in the stats, is in the rebounding category, where they're doing it, and you know they are that kind of center. They're blocking shots. So they're doing those things historically. Some of our fours are doing some of those things today, but they're doing some of those things. So given that, I have KG. He's a little bit out of my what I'm saying because he steps a little farther away from the hoop, but I am throwing KG in there.
Did we lose you?
Yeah, he had KG a little bit lower than I had KG. Because I had KG at 3 and D. Will's coming with KG at 5. Why don't you move into your list, man? We'll have D. Will.
Yeah, I'm going to jump into mine, and we'll let D. Will come back with his. So I have a similar take on the 5 position, the true center that you do, PhD. Does he have to be guarded by a 5? Can a 5 guard him? Or does he have to be guarded by a 5? Not a guy you could put a 4 on. A true center is a guy you put a 4 on, it's a definite mismatch. In the same sense, if he's out, maybe he can guard a 4, but you want him guarding another. You want him on a 5 as far as his defensive assignment. Offensively, he controls the block. All right, he's going to run that block area. He's a guy you can dump it into. He's got a hook shot. He's got a drop step. You know, he's got a running hook. He's got an up and under move. Fundamental stuff. Then, on the defensive end, he rebounds at a high rate. I'm getting my Huey Brown on. This guy gets you 10 to 12 rebounds on a nightly basis. On offense, he'll shoot above 50% from the floor. He's a high percentage shooter around the basket. You know what I mean? And he anchors the back line of your defense. That's my true center. Now, guys who I think fit into that mold, right now, number 5, I'm with you, PhD, Al Jefferson. You know, I think he's grown into it. I think when he came into the league, he was more of a 4. But right now, his game, he's a 5. He's got some of the best footwork. He's one of the best post players offensively in the league. Defensively, you don't want to put this brother on the 4. He's got lead feet on defense. Now, I don't have facts to back that up other than what I've seen. I don't got no metrics or numbers like that, but the brother's got some lead feet. All right.
He does have fine. L. Liability Jefferson. That could be on the back of his jersey.
At number 4, again, I'm with you. I got Brook Lopez. You know, back when LeBron was trying to make his decision, before the decision, you know, I thought the Nets were a great destination for him because he would get to play with Brook Lopez, who at that time was coming off a 20-8 season. Who knew that would be the last time he would average 8 rebounds? Brook Lopez right now, he has the offensive piece, but defensively and with the rebounding, he has to really step his game up. He's not anywhere near being a rebounder. He should be at 7 feet, 260, 250 pounds. But I put him at number 4 because I think he has the most potential right now of anybody to be a true 5. He's a better scorer than a guy like Roy Hibbert, who rebounds at a better clip. I think he has more offensively than Roy Hibbert does as far as his offensive game, which is really the only reason he's on my list. Number 3, Mark Gasol. Mark Gasol is extremely skilled, back to the basket, big, a bruiser. He's going to anchor that back line to your defense. He's really coming to his own the last couple of years. Good rebounder, shoots at a high percentage. He's what I want in the big, and he doesn't need a ton of touches to really get going and give you, and be effective. Number 2, Andrew Bynum, no surprise there. His second best big man in the league. He's really, if he has another great year like he did last year, he gets close to pushing his way into a 1-1A situation with Dwight. Number 1 big man in the league is Dwight Howard. Despite his offensive limitation, he still does give you 20-13 on a nightly basis with 2 to 3 blocks a night. I think, you know, and my criticism of him, you know, we got cocaine out. My criticism of him is I think he should be getting 25 and 27 points a night. You know, that's what my expectation of a guy with his athletic ability. In this climate of in this NBA with the lack of big men, he should be giving you close to 30 points on a nightly basis. But that's not who he is as an offensive player. He's in his, eighth or seventh year in the league. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot much more.
Cannot win with him.
Different. Can't do it. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of anything else from him. I think this is who he is. But right now, that allows him to be the best big man in the league. So that's my top five.
I got a problem with it, Mark. I got a problem with it. And at number three, you got Mark Gasol at number three. I have a problem with that. So you like Mark Gasol over KG as a true five?
KG doesn't do enough with his back to the basket for me. He's still a face-up four. He's just playing five. You could guard KG with a four.
Name me three guys in the league that have a better post game. A better post game than KG.
Right. Yes, KG is an extremely skilled offensive player, but so is Kobe on the block. That doesn't make him a five. Kobe's an extremely skilled post player as well. Chauncey Billups, great post-up player. They ain't make him a five.
KG walks like a five.
Because you're not going to put a five on him. The only reason KG played five last year is because they didn't have a five. It wasn't like, I think it's a good idea to put KG at a five. They were like, we ain't got a five.
Name one thing KG can do that a good quality five who shows up on our list can. One thing that he can't do at an adequate
you don't have to
or above
KG
average
with
level.
A five. You don't have to, you could put a four on KG. That's the criteria. You could put a four on KG. That's why I wouldn't put Kevin Love in that situation. Kevin Love, you can find Kevin Love guarding KG and it's not a big deal. Why? Because both of them four. You could put Blake Griffin on KG. He ain't a five. You're not going to put DeAndre Jordan on him, though. That's all I'm saying. Part of the reason KG excelled last year is because people were putting fives on him, and he ate them alive because he's a four. And he pulled them away from the bucket. When he got a four on him, he took them down low. But he's not a five.
See, there was a time where Joe Dumars was one of the top five point guards in the league, but he played primarily at shooting guard. So just because KG is one of the best fours in the league, but he can fill out the shoes of a five, he can guard fives, and he's a matchup headache for fives to guard him, I don't think that's a strong enough criteria to take him out of the conversation of a five. He has the size of a five. He can defend any, and I say any five in the league. And just because other fives can't guard him, I mean, that's not a knock. I mean, think about it.
Here we go. Here we go, right? Boston and Oklahoma City is playing, right? Let's say Fab Melo turns out to be a legitimate NBA player and he's starting for the Celtics, right? I know, big leap, right? Stretch Armstrong, right?
Stretch. All right, I'm sorry, I'm back. Go ahead.
Let's say Fab Melo is a legit NBA player, right? You feel me? Follow me. Just ignore the name, all right?
Okay.
Let's say the Celtics have a legit five, okay? They're going up against a team like the Clippers. If you're Vinny Del Negro, okay, that's another stretch. We're going to be Vinny Del for a minute, all right? You're Vinny Del Negro. Are you putting DeAndre Jordan on KG or are you putting him on Fab Melo? Or
you're going to put him on Fab Melo.
Right.
Marcus,
why? Because you want a five against a five.
Marcus, I'm about to
You're not going to put him on KG.
Let me know when you're ready for me to put your story on blast, your whole point on blast.
Bring it.
According to your rationale, we wouldn't put Magic Johnson in the point guard category.
No, he played point. He's a point.
Well, your rationale is another point can't guard him.
No, you're going to put a point on Magic. That's my point. You're going to put a point on Magic. If Magic is out there, Byron Scott is out there, you're going to put your two on Byron and your point on Magic.
Yeah, a lot of teams didn't match up that way with Magic. A lot of teams went with twos and threes on Magic for the size. But again, I mean, I'm not really buying the story of how teams decide to match you up, defines your criteria, what position that you should be defined at.
My thing is that our criteria was he has to be guarded by a five. KG does not have to be guarded by a five.
Fair enough.
You don't have to put a five on him. You could put a four on him, and you could roll with that.
That's all I'm saying. You got to put a 5 on Dwight. You have to put a 5 on Bynum. That's really it. For real.
Roy Hibbert.
Roy Hibbert, you have to put a 5 on him. You know, if Greg Oden were around, you'd have to put a 5 on him. Shut up.
Greg Oden's fighting. Greg Oden's fighting, yes.
Hey, I started to link you guys to a real interesting article about him on Grantland.com, man. If you get a chance, man, I'll have to link y'all up to it, man. He just talked about that cat. You know, that's one of my guys, man. I'm an Oden guy. But anyway, we got G-Wills back in the fold. So, yeah, man, yeah, I didn't put KG at a 5. It's not that I have Mark Gasol being a better player than KG. I just don't classify KG as a 5 right now. That's all. I think KG's a better player than Gasol. KG was number 26 on my top 25. Gasol was like 30. So.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, y'all were going at it. It was good for me just being on the sidelines, and you know, I said something that short circuited me. I must have was going on the wrong line, but after hearing both of y'all, I think I'm in the middle. And what I was raising, I think, before I departed abruptly, was game changer. You, Marcus, you put kind of that thing together, probably a little bit more better than I did in terms of the things that I think a true five does. But I think in this era, some of those things, some of them have a spike. You know, in this era, they get on the list, as you raised, for maybe Brooke Lopez, because he might be an elite as an offensive scorer or emerging star. So they may not dominate multiple categories. And so that kind of drove my top 5. I did put KG on there at 5 because I was in between both of your arguments around where KG should go. But I think at this point in his career, he's playing more of that 5. But I think his success is actually because of some of the reasons that you said, Marcus, he can eat those guys up. But they're not going to, you know, but he can no longer go and guard those 4s. So he's trying to guard 5s and 4s. They're mixing and matching them depending on the team and the matchups. But I don't know if he's filling out that true 5 position. But I did believe he was at 5. I have Marc Gasol at 4 for the number of reasons that you said, Marcus, around. I mean, he's a physical. He defends that back end. He's got that low post scoring ability. I think he's there. My third is just because what he does better than probably everybody but Dwight. I mean, for what he does on the defensive end is Tyson Chandler and what he means as an anchor. And what he brings around the rebounding, shot block. You know, he's not an offensive person as much. But he's and what he does well. He's elite at.
All right, man, I got to throw a flag like a replacement ref, man. Tyson Chandler. Man, Tyson Chandler is one of the most overrated players in the league, man.
See, now
got you stuttering now. Got you stuttering, D.
you could go to
come on, man. Tyson Chandler, man.
Look.
I was going through my list and trying to figure out my top 25, man. And I was talking to somebody. And they were like, oh, Tyson Chandler. Why? Why do we give this cat so much love, man? He's a good player. He's a good player.
But for what he does as a rebounder, he's elite. Is he an elite rebounder or not?
No.
He is an elite rebounder.
No, he's not.
They are who we thought they were.
The elite shot blocker.
Did he even average 10 boards last season? Did Tyson Chandler even get 10 boards a game? I'm looking at it. I'm trying to get that right now, man. My connection is slow.
There you go. It's telling you all you need to know. Top 2 defenders in the league, 3 defenders. Tyson's on that list, along with D12.
Give me a moment, man. Give me a moment. And this dude has had 2 seasons where he averaged over 10 rebounds in his whole career. 2.
Over if you look over the last for Dallas,
he don't even career average.
He was
10 rebounds
was
a game.
Dallas winning.
He was yes. He was a great role player. He's a very good glue guy.
Great role player. He led. He led that.
Marcus called him a glue guy.
Glue guy. Come on, man.
That's so harsh, man. You can't call him a glue guy now.
I mean, you call him a rubber guy, but not a glue guy.
Hold it. He's more of an impact player than Brooke Lopez. Brooke Lopez is the hoop version of Paris Hilton, and you got him on the list.
Yeah, I do. I got him, and I got him above Tyson Chandler, man.
Tyson Chandler is top five internet moguls.
You know what Tyson Chandler's career? You know what his highest career numbers are? 8.6 points a game, 8.9 rebounds a game, 1.4 block shots a game.
I will say that we're talking about the best player right now. We can't really go into career numbers. I will say that. That's not fair.
And when you talk about impact on the back end, Tyson Chandler's name comes up. You talk to Coach
I'd take Forrest over Tyson Chandler, man. You could have convinced me of Al Horford. You could have convinced me of LaMarcus Aldridge.
I mean, Chandler's offensive
game. Not at number three, man.
Chandler's offensive game makes Dwight Howard look like Patrick Ewing in the post. That's how bad Chandler's game is.
Right.
I said today's true center is elite in something. And he is elite as a defender. He's been all defensive team, first team. He's been recognized as a defensive player of the year.
He was all defensive second team last year.
He's defensive player of the year?
He was all defense. Yeah, as a defensive player, yeah, he was all defensive second team.
But I can't call that. But he was defensive player of the year. I can say that.
That's like the MVP being second team All NBA.
Man, the center in the NBA. NBA center is kind of like a fullback. Fullbacks used to be relevant in NFL offenses 25, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, a true center as we knew it. I mean, it's just not relevant when you got a pool of three guys. That's your pool. Quality center. It's not relevant.
And that's why I always get a little upset when people say, "Oh, you got to take Dwight Howard. He's dominant." Who cares? He's got comp. Like, you need him twice a year. I would rather have a great wing because I'm gonna need him every night.
Hold it. Let me finish my list and then we're gonna go back.
Go for it.
I knew I was gonna do this. I'll just finish it because we consistent with it. Bynum and Howard. Now let the arguments begin. You're right. We try to talk about what's the best fullback in the game, but we set that up. So if I tell you I like the cat that blows holes up, he may not catch any passes out the backfield, but he leads that running game for 49ers. That's what I'm going with. We only got a couple backs in there who will catch out the backfield, block, and do everything else. The rest of them.
And it really raises the question of should we really care? I mean, do we really care about fullbacks? No. NBA centers, do we really care about them other than three or four names? No. I mean, it's just a guy you have to throw out there. And we're starting to see teams not even throw them out there anymore.
That's right. Yeah. Because the most valuable center in some places is we given these few centers are folks who can really, I mean, the centers who actually are effective, however they're defined, are the ones who can be stretched. And
that's
space floor. Those are some of the most effective big men in the league right now. Is the ones who can stretch and allow for you to do a more inverted kind of offense. So I mean, if we really want to talk about the centers who are most effective, are the ones who can step out there by the 3-point line and let it fly. That's why KG is effective because he kick it to him. KG made a living last year hitting it right there from the top of the key to the left hand floor. That's where he made his living.
Hey, all I got to say.
Maybach music.
Hey, we wore that one out. That was good. we gonna keep it moving, though. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Now, we're going to recap the NFL Week 5. A lot of things going on. We have the Houston Texans 5-0. The Atlanta Falcons at 5-0, and then we got we had some interesting stuff going in Kansas City. You know, quarterback Matt Castle goes down with an injury, and the crowd cheers. Now the
I don't know if the whole crowd is backtracking or just some of the people in the crowd, but for some reason now the perception is that the crowd is saying that they were cheering. I mean, I don't know if they're all saying it together, if they like wrote a letter together or what, but somehow they've all come to a consensus that they were cheering for Brady Quinn. I don't know how that works. It's 70,000 people. I don't know if they got together and had another meeting at Arrowhead and decided, no, we really weren't booing. Or we really weren't cheering Castle going down. We were cheering for Brady Quinn. Who has ever done that? Who has ever cheered for Brady Quinn? All right?
Other than Mike.
Nobody cheered. Right. Nobody's cheered for Brady Quinn since he left Notre Dame. Especially when he's entering the game. Maybe, again, to lead the game, to get traded, but never to enter the game. So we had a lot going on in week five. So the first thing I want to throw out to the fellas, we're going to toss around the table real quick, is what do we know now? PhD, what do we know now about the NFL after week five?
Well, I think we know that the Texans are for real. They want a grind-out game against the Jets that we'll talk about a little bit later. I think we also know that quarterbacks are progressing a lot faster. Look at what we saw with Andrew Luck, Ponder. We're seeing guys progress, and by the time they hit the second season, we're seeing more of these guys play at a more higher and sustained level. I mean, Andy Dalton so far. Cam's kind of taking a step back, but I've got confidence that he'll steer the ship out. I'm still holding out, man, with the Falcons. I'm still holding out. I mean, these guys will have to be 13-0 before I buy in, you know. But I think those are a few things that we found out.
Okay. D. Wills, what do you now know after week five about the NFL?
You know, I would say that I would agree with D. Newell that we know Houston is for real. We also know that Tannenbaum is a terrible GM when it comes to offense, which we'll talk about later, that the Jets just had no plan. We know that San Francisco going to be around for a while, even though they have the right bones. In some ways, I think San Francisco is going to force teams to be thinking differently about how they're approaching the game. We went to this spread, wide-open offense, and I got – there's a number of reasons when we talk about Green Bay, why some of these quarterbacks struggle, why do you allow to have some of these comebacks, that we've – the pendulum has swung too far, in my mind, in the wrong direction for you to sustain things. And I think what we learned from San Francisco is that Jim Harbaugh has a plan that I think will stay for a while, and that is Bear. And we learned that the Bears' defense ain't no joke.
Mm. Well, what I learned in week five is that balance is back in the NFL. Last season, like as you alluded to, D. Wills, the league got real pass happy. You know, you had the shortened training camp, lockout, all that stuff. I think that seemed, in retrospect, hindsight 2020, to lend itself to offenses having a bit of an advantage. Now the defense then took all that film, broke it down to let it forever be broken, and now the teams that are winning are the teams that can move the ball. And when it became evident to me that things had, like you said, the pendulum had swung too far, and I think we hit our peak last year, and now we're going back the other way. You know, the pendulum can only swing so far before it's coming back around. So I think it's coming back now, and what really is a sign to me is that Bill Belichick is always at the cusp of what's going on in the league. Mm-hmm. And the Patriots the last 2 weeks have run the ball for 200-plus yards.
Yeah.
Last year, this was a team that was throwing the ball all over the ballpark. I think he sees, after struggling, trying to do that in the first couple of weeks, they tried to do that, and they struggled. Belichick went back to the drawing board and said, nah, we got to rethink this. We got to come at this a different way because defenses are doing something different to take all of that stuff away. So we're going to take what they're giving us, which is the run game. Atlanta, very strong run game. Houston, very strong run game. San Francisco, very strong run game. The Giants, very strong run game. Who's struggling? Teams like the Packers. Teams like the Lions. You know, teams that were very successful last year, the Eagles. Teams that were very successful last year, explosive offenses, the Saints. Not so explosive right now. Why? No consistent run game. Anybody seen Mark Ingram? Anybody, former Heisman Trophy winner, went to Alabama, number 22, big leg, short, stocky dude.
Yeah.
Anybody seen him? No. Check the seventh ward. Might want to look for that cat. You know what I mean? So that's what I feel like we saw. Balance is back. That's what I feel like I know about the NFL after week five. Balance is back. Run games and defenses. And big-time, hard-hitting, physical football is back after, you know, a year. You know, physical football was on strike all last season, but it's back now. And it's back in a big way. If you don't got a running game, I think you're in trouble. If you don't have a stout defense, I think you're in trouble. I don't think we're going to see a team give up the most passing yards in the league and make it to the Super Bowl or go 15-1 like we did last year. So that's what I feel like I know after week five. Now, getting into some of the games, the first game we want to kind of recap and kind of give some perspective on is the Packers versus the Colts. The Packers going to halftime with a 21-3 lead, somehow wind up losing this game. This is a Green Bay Packer team that went 15-1 last season, and yes, it was last season, but they pretty much returned the same core as team. They added in pieces through the draft. This team was supposed to be on par, if not better, than the team that they had last year. Just as explosive offensively. Aaron Rodgers is coming off one of the greatest seasons a quarterback has ever had. But yet, something's not there this season. And the Colts took advantage of it. Andrew Luck, they kept plugging away. You know, their coach is in the hospital. He had to take a leave of absence. Coach Chuck Pagano diagnosed with leukemia, so there. Rallying around him. There's a lot of emotion. The Packers are on the road, and Andrew Luck and the boys pulled it out. Reggie Wayne went nuts. So it's just a crazy game. Very entertaining, but crazy. What was your initial thoughts, D. Wills, on the Packers-Colts game?
You know, I think it's back to what we were saying before, and I think that's why you make yourself susceptible to the comeback is because you got to have the ability to close the game out, to pound it. And I think Benson getting hurt, some other things, but they've never really invested in their run game. And I think when the Packers were great, they not only could pass, but they could control you with their run game. And I think that allowed for Indianapolis to keep chipping away. And, you know, Andrew Luck, you know, made his money. He made his mark yesterday. That final drive was incredible. You know, Rodgers, you know, when you put the ball up, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to get sacked. You're going to get pushed around. And, you know, they just don't have – they don't have the screen game they used to have. They don't have the run game. There's nothing – people just pin their ears back and come after them. And so, you know, I think they got to go back to the drawing board and really figure out how to get a little bit more balance. But I think, you know, this is a tough loss for Green Bay. Really tough loss.
Yeah. And with the Seattle loss, it puts them behind an eight ball because Minnesota and Chicago are kind of hot right now.
Yes. And they just.
The issue I see with the Packers, too, man, is like Devon mentioned, they're not running the ball well. If you look at the stats, they ran for 140 yards. On Sunday, but it's kind of misleading because Rodgers accounted for almost half of that with scrambles. The other thing is the sacks, man. I remember two seasons ago when they actually won the Super Bowl and they went 9-7, I think, in a regular season. There were a few games that Rodgers, man, just got, I mean, he got killed. It was like Jay Cutler-esque, the number of times he was getting sacked. And we were talking about all these different issues. And so
I'm not overly concerned about the Packers right now because last year they were winning by a defense that had a lot of takeaways, and they were also just outscoring people, man. How many games did they win 38 to 35. I remember that game over the Giants last year. I mean, they score a lot of points, and when they can't do that, I mean, we can't expect for their defense to step up because, you know, I mean, their defense is what it is. It's always been that way. I think the excessive number of takeaways kind of covered up a lot of the issues that defense had. The last piece is, you know, they're missing Greg Jennings. Oftentimes we forget how important of a player he is to that offense. You know, last year Jordy Nelson had an excellent year, put up some huge numbers. But one of the reasons he put up those huge numbers is because the defense shifted a lot towards Finley, who might be out for a little bit, as well as Greg Jennings. So when you don't have those dynamics, now you know why a number two guy isn't a number one guy. And when he becomes a number one guy, I mean, he just can't make as many plays. So they need to get Jennings back. Sounds like it might be another 3 or 4 weeks before they do get Greg back. But if they can hold on and hang around 500, man, the Packers are good enough. If they can get in the tournament, they can make some noise.
And I'm sorry, fellas. I think I was blowing up the lines too much to do it. But I want to just carry on your point. The problem with the Packers, and maybe y'all tell me, they're not strong up the middle. But, you know, a great defense. Y'all football guys, y'all know the game. Would you say the Packers are strong up the middle defensively? They score enough points. Are they strong up the middle?
No, they're not strong up the middle, and I think also they're not at the cornerback position. They're not. They're still very susceptible to the pass. Again, this defense gave up the most pass yards in league history last year, and the only reason they didn't. The only reason they went 15-1 is because they could outscore you, and they did outscore you, and they were a machine. They had a machine-like rhythm going. It was like a video game last year. This year, not so much. Finley's dropping balls all the time. Greg Jennings is hurt. They've been without him. Jordy Nelson is a two. James Jones is a three. Randall Cobb right now is a three. You don't have a legit number one. People aren't really scared of Jermichael Finley like they were before. And you have no running game. And so teams are pinning their ears back. And defensively, they still can't stop anybody. You know, they have games where Clay Matthews gets his hair on fire and he's getting after the quarterback. But that's only against teams who can't block and who are ineffective in pass block. They go against a team with a solid line. And they can be worn down. And, you know, those DBs, they're not very deep at corner either. I mean, you got Tremont Williams, Shields, I think it's Jared Bush. Those guys, Shields is decent. He's more of a nickel back. Bush is a nickel back, a fourth corner at best. And Tremont Williams is a really good corner. But other than that, they're not super effective. Safety, you got Charles Woodson. And I think they need to figure out how to utilize him better because at safety, he's not as dynamic as he was when they had him at corner, using him on the blitzes and things like that where he made a lot more plays. Playing him that far off the line, I don't think it's helping him out a whole lot. That's one of your best playmakers, and you have him, you know, 15 to 20 yards away from the ball. So I think there's a lot going on with him.
And when you look at it, three of their five games, they scored 20 or more points. They had a couple games they didn't play that well. But they don't stop the run or the pass. And I play defense, you got to stop one of them. You got to stop one. They don't stop the run or the pass. And I would think, because of what you just said to Woodson, y'all would at least at this point in your life commit to stopping one of them and maybe stop the run and figure out what you do after. But their defense – it's got to be better when you look at the personnel that they have. I just don't see them being strong up the middle. I think there's things you could do in the corner if you get pushed up the middle. You know, the linemen who were being hailed as, you know, on that Super Bowl run, none of those cats came to play. And it starts up front. And so that's my big thing. I look at them at, you can hide some stuff on the back end when you got guys who can play up front, other than, you know, one superstar that all you got to do is slide the protection to block him. So that's my thing with Green Bay, and they got to run the football. But, you know, I ain't mad at him because I'm okay with Green Bay losing. So I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to, you know, I'm kind of soft about the Super Bowl anyway. So I'm going to say that right now. I know Green Bay fans are, my Green Bay friends are mad, but get to, other than Woodson, good riddance.
Yeah, I think they got to figure out what's going on out there, because when you give a game, like, even though it was a road game, when you give the game like that away to what appears to be a lesser team, when you give a game like that away, and you're in a division chase with two other solid teams, every game counts, and every game is going to be important down the stretch. When you're looking at an AFC West, where you got San Francisco playing well, Arizona still only has one loss. Who knows if they'll be able to keep it up? And then you also have St. Louis, who looks very strong, and Seattle, who looks strong. That team has four. That division has four teams that are going to be in the mix. Then you got the NFC East, where you have, you know, the Giants are going to be in the mix. We'll see if the Eagles keep winning. For the most part, and then you got a team like Dallas who could get hot at any given time. So they have to really figure out how to get into a rhythm really quickly, what they're going to do in the backfield, and how they're going to find some balance. That's the name of the game right now, in my opinion, is balance. Speaking of a team that's found balance, the Patriots and Broncos squared off. The Patriots got the better end of this Manning versus Brady matchup, and the first thing I want to throw out, and I want PAD to is the Manning Brady thing. How is that? Is that a big deal to you, or was that just they need to sell this game? Is that still a big rivalry to you, Manning versus Brady?
I mean, it kind of lost a little bit of the swag compared to what it was, you know, a few years ago when Manning had the well-oiled machine in Indianapolis, man. But then when you take a step back and you say, well, this is kind of like Stockton and Isaiah going at it, you know, like Ewing and Olajuwon going at it. We kind of need to appreciate this. I mean, these guys are going to go down as, you know, two of the top 20, perhaps even 10 quarterbacks that have ever played the game. So we need to, you know, recognize game when these two guys play. So yeah, I was into it.
Okay. Now, in this game, the Patriots rushed for, they had 251 rushing yards.
Yeah.
251 rushing yards, a ridiculous amount. They only threw for 193, threw the ball 31 times, had 54 rushing attempts. Again, you know, I feel like Belichick is always, you can always kind of catch the pulse of the league and where things are going by what Belichick is doing. You know, he brought out the two tight ends last year. Now everybody's trying to get two tight ends. You know, now the Patriots are putting the ball on the ground, man. They're running it. You know, sign of the times. Is it just a trend? Who knows? Where do you see this Patriots team going? Are they a threat to the Texans and the Steelers and some of the upper echelon teams early on in the season out in the AFC? Are they a threat?
I think they are, and the reason being is that they can adapt to play any style now. Last year, like you alluded to, they had to whip it around. They had to outscore you. Now their defense is looking better, and the thing I liked about it, yeah, I mean, the rushing yards was very impressive. You know, really, I think he had 28 touches. He went over 150. You know, Woodhead had a nice game as well. But the thing that impressed me most is Brady. Brady gave what the defense, he took what the defense gave him. And so, yeah, I mean, he barely cracked 200 or was right under 200, something like that. But he had like 12 throws, that first down throws. So he was taking what the defense gave him, but at the same time, he was very patient. He didn't turn the ball over. He took a couple of coverage sacks. Which, you know, some people have, but you know, those coverage sacks were throws that earlier in the season he may have been trying to force them and may have led to turnovers. So, to me, they're kind of just biding their time, man. You know, Gronkowski, he's a little banged up. He didn't get the normal production. They were without Hernandez. And I think Bill was just trying to tread water, man, until he got his big dogs back. And treading water for a good football team like that means W's mostly.
All right. Now, the Broncos are still kind of figuring things out. Manning had a great day. 345 yards, three TDs, no picks, only got sacked twice. What's holding that team back out there with the Broncos? It still feels like, you know, when they talk about, you know, Jermaine Jackson and that curl that just quite didn't quite roll over, you know what I'm saying? It just didn't quite, that's what you see a lot of with, that's how I feel about the Broncos team. Like, they just quite ain't got it, you know. They got a lot of pieces. They guys are performing. You know, Demaryius Thomas had a big day, nine catches, 188 yards, but it's just not quite there yet. D-Will, do you think the Broncos are going to get there?
It's going to take some time. I mean, I think the thing that they don't have that we just say is the difference is that he doesn't have enough playmakers, but he doesn't have that dominant running game. I mean, McGahee is serviceable, but, you know, he's not getting – it doesn't feel like he's getting that kind of production that you have to put the folks in the box like Brady's getting. And I think that's the difference. When you're looking at somebody like Ridley, who had 151 yards and a touch, I mean, they were not allowing you to key on Brady. In a way that I think he needs. So I think he needs a few more pieces. It doesn't feel like, and maybe y'all can correct me, he doesn't have that tight end. I mean, because he does a lot of his work a lot of times in that middle of the field. I mean, he needs somebody to emerge in that spot. And then one thing is towards the end of his time in Indianapolis, he was using that running game and that play-action pass. And so, I think as they establish, they got the linemen. I think they, you know, you need to get somebody that folks are going to respect on a regular basis. I think it'll open his game up. And then I think his receivers are just getting used to him. I think they're there. It's going to take them a little while to just continue to grow with him each week. But I think they got the right pieces in place to go with him. He may not get everything out of him this year, but I think, you know, they come back next year, add a couple more pieces. I think he's going to be fine.
Okay. Now, the last game we're going to kind of reflect on for a moment, the Texans versus the Jets. Monday Night Football, the Jets are in total disarray. The main playmaker, Tannehill, home, out for what looks like the remainder of the season. Darrell Reeves is the number one playmaker.
Can I ask you a quick question before we go on? I don't want to interrupt.
Absolutely.
But you didn't say anything about the Welker comment. Did you hear about that? What he said?
What did Welker say? I didn't catch it.
Well, he got iced the first week, obviously. Belichick's not going to come out there. He got the 13 receptions, and they asked him about it. And he said, you know, and this is unusual, uncharacteristic of a Patriots player. He said it feels good to stick it to Bill every once in a while. Did you hear that, Bill T? And it was just, and then they asked Bill, and he was just like, you should ask him what he meant. I don't know what he meant. But there's something going on between Welker and Belichick. There's something there. That's going on. So I would say that's something we should probably pay attention to going down. But you hardly ever hear those kind of remarks out of a Patriot player that you
yeah.
that Welker said.
I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting.
Just offhand, you know, and my initial reaction is that has something to do with the whole contract fiasco this summer. You know, maybe there were some comments that, you know, he lost a step. You know, he can't do what he once used to do. And, you know, maybe there's some question of his ability and his ability to continue to perform at the level he had been performing at. And when I hear that, I don't think it's so much reason to the first couple of weeks of the season, but I think just overall how the Patriots usually do guys after, you know, they've done their time there and they get to that point where it looks like they should get the big contract and then they don't give it to them. I think one of the conversations is, well, you're not going to produce at that level, so why should I give you this big deal? You know, I'm sure that's one of the comments that is made when they're negotiating, and I think that's what kind of Welker was getting after. That's just my initial thoughts on it. You know, that's real interesting because yeah, you don't hear that from Patriot guys. Patriot guys usually walk the line pretty close. You know, they usually keep it in step.
Just wanted to throw that out there. That might end up being a funky editorial in a couple of weeks if it keeps brewing.
It might. And the point I want to point out to the listeners, again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Check out the boys at Resistance Digital to get all your electronic needs met at a low, low price. So make sure you hit them up at resistancedigital.com. One thing I want to point out to the listeners out there is, you're hearing us talk about this balance thing, right, and how the run game and defense is back. Nobody else, no media people are saying that right now. Give it another 2 weeks, ESPN is going to be all over ESPN, it's going to be all over Yahoo, but you heard it here first, all right?
That's right.
Telling you in week five, all right? After 5 weeks, we see it. Running the ball, balance, defense is back. That high-flying stuff that we saw last year, I don't really think it's going to fly now. All right, the defensive coordinators locked themselves in the dungeon. They cooked up some stuff, and they got some stuff to limit that passing game. And you got to have balance in 2012. But you heard that here first. Now watch, next week ESPN's going to be running with that. You know, Yahoo's going to be running with that. Everybody's going to be writing stories about how you have to have balance and how all the best teams in the league have balance. We talked about that here first. All right? Now, speaking of that balance that teams have to have, you have the Texans and the Jets. Now, the Jets are really just, I mean, they're a tire fire right now, just jacked up, just all in disarray, okay? I mean, right now, the Jets are a pimp, and their outfit just don't match. The girls is just doing whatever it is they want to do. You know, they're not coming in with the money. The money ain't right. It's not coming on time. They working on the streets. You know, everything is just out of order. It's out of pocket. That's the Jets right now. On the other hand, you got the Texans. The Texans, it looks like it's their time. This is a franchise that has been kind of at the cusp. Injuries come. They get hit with a bunch of injuries, and they always wind up finishing like 8-8. Every year is their year. They're going to make the playoffs, and they finish 8-8. Because Andre Johnson missed 6 games, and Matt Schaub missed 5, and Arian Foster misses 3. But this seems like the year where they're finally going to put it together. That defense is nasty. J.J. Watt is a monster. They got guys flying around. They got good corners. First, I want to before we get into the Texans and how great they look right now, and again, this is right now. This is a snapshot in time. This is just week 5. They could look very different in week 10, but right now, they look good. The Jets, they don't look good. They look bad. And I mean bad. P-A-D. Last year, you rolled Tim Tebow in your fantasy football league. You coined the phrase, Tebow been good to me. That's RSG copyrighted. Tebow been good to me. When is your boy coming? Is Tebow coming or what? Is it going to be Tebow time soon? All right. D. Wills. Tebow, is he coming?
I think they're going to utilize him more. What I did like about the Jets last night, and I know Coach Ryan is not going to – he doesn't – you know, there are no kind of sentimental victories. But what I did see after taking the beat down they took by San Francisco and San Francisco's like Joe Frazier. When you fight them, you after that fight is over, you feel like there's going to be a problem. Your body, your organs might not be right. But what I saw about the Jets is they gave that effort, and some cats stepped up. They're in trouble. I think they're going to get a larger dose of Tebow, but I think they're going to try to ride Sanchez out a little bit, and they're going to try and shore some stuff up on defense. I thought their defense played a little stronger after being shaky early. You know, they're 2-0 in their division, I believe, right? So, I mean, as bad as they're struggling and looking, they're still in the thick of things. And so I think there's going to be more Tebow. What I don't like about they run in the option with Tebow, and what I thought Denver did a good job with him is direct snap and let him run right behind a fullback and find his spots. I don't see them doing much of that. I see them running him laterally, and I don't think you need to just do that. I would love to see them snap it to him and let him follow a fullback up in there and get, you know, some of his best runs were like 6-8 yard runs moving the chain, and I don't see them doing enough of that.
PhD's back in the fold. You know, we talked about, you know, Tebow been good to me. D. Wheels kind of laid it out there. What's your perspective on Tebow?
He was trying to pick Tebow up on waivers, man. Don't let him fool you. He was trying to pick Tebow up.
That's why we lost him for a second. He was over there trying to manage one of his squads. He was trying to get Tebow off the waiver ride real quick.
Well, again, man, I'm not overly concerned about the Jets because they're playing horrible and they're only one game out. You know, same thing about the Eagles. You know, the Eagles are doing horrible. Well, they're one game above 500. You know, so the thing that does concern me is Sanchez, man. I tell you what, in a time in which he's losing folks around him, like he's losing his weapons left and right. He lost Sean Green. Don't know where he went, but he lost him. You know, Sanchez, man, Sanchez, you know, that ESPN QBR rating, said an average is a 50. Sanchez is barely in double figures at like 10.1. I mean, it is horrible right now. So I think at some point, because Rex is going to go down swinging, man. So he's not going to go down, get fired after this year, thinking back, maybe I should have gave Tebow half a season. Sanchez got another week or two, man. If they get a game under 500, Timmy's going to be playing a lot more than the 10 snaps he played on Sunday. So, I'm sorry, yesterday. So, at some point, man, I think we're going to see Tebow. Think about it. Think about how bad the Broncos looked, man, the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And they made the playoffs. They made the playoffs, so you don't make a move to get a player like Tebow and not let him play. Now,
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Exactly. So at some point, man, if Sanchez, if he's got another two games, I think if they get halfway through the season and they're more in the game under, Tebow's going to get a shot, man. I just don't know what Tebow could do because in Denver, he had a dominant defense. The Jets, once upon a time, had a dominant defense, but they ain't got one right now. And they had a very strong running game in Denver, and they had two talented receivers. They don't have any of those tools or weapons around, man. The last thing to consider is Sanchez. I mean, this is a guy that you spent a high first-round pick on. If you go to Tebow, man, in a lot of ways, you probably got to move on from Sanchez, and they may be okay with that now. They've invested 4 years in a young man. He hasn't progressed like you'd hope him to. I mean, you look over and see what Flacco's done. Sorry, Devon. I mean, you look over and you see what Ryan has done. You know, you see what some of these second-year players have done, and then you got your boy like, okay, man, you know, the stats say you're going to be picking it up any day. Is it today or is it going to be tomorrow? I mean, we're waiting for you to do something. So at some point,
Is that on Sanchez? Because, he's never had anything. Nothing.
You gave him Santonio Holmes and nothing else.
I mean, right, Santonio Holmes is decent. Santonio Holmes has never been a headbuster. Not like they gave him Megatron.
To me, that's the criticism of Tannenbaum. I mean, who's the running back? They had a running game. They let Brassman, they let all these pieces go. And what have they been doing for people like, you know, over in Baltimore, you got Ray Rice, you got Torrey Smith, you got people, they're adding talent around, they're investing.
Ground and pound, baby, ground and pound.
I'm trying to figure out. He's what, he's got a winning record in the playoffs.
And so then here's the other piece. I want to frame it up, put it in perspective a little bit for the listeners out there. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, talking NFL football. This is one of Buddy's kids, all right? This is one of Buddy Ryan boys. Buddy gave two rats about what happened on the offensive side of the ball. Buddy could care less. As long as they didn't throw a pick and they didn't turn it over, he didn't care if they punted all game. Buddy never had great offenses. He never had great offenses as a head coach. Is there something to that? Like, is it a Ryan thing as well? Is it Tannenbaum and Ryan? Or is it all Tannenbaum? Is it more Ryan? Because is Tannenbaum trying to get guys to fit Rex's philosophy? And is Rex's philosophy a derivative of what his daddy did?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in some ways, man, we've seen a formula for young quarterbacks in this new millennium of football and this new movement of football. You put them in your starting lineup and you take the governor off. You just let them go. You let them go. And with Sanchez, man, I mean, they just didn't put the governor on it. I mean, they put a president on that mug. I mean, they had this cat throwing 7-8 times in a playoff game. Seven or eight times over the course of a playoff game. So I think in some ways you bring up a good point, D, that perhaps his development, like the early restrictions they put on this cat, stunted his growth, man. And when you are learning anything new, a lot of times it's all about the context in which you're learning in.
That's right.
And when you're thrown in the fire and you got to respond, yeah, you're going to make some stupid plays, some errors. But at some point, I mean, you're either going to sink or swim. And most, you know, quarterbacks nowadays coming from a pro-style offense at USC, they going to swim at some point.
Yep.
And, I mean, when you learn to play everything, you know, not having to make complete reads, like Game Changer said last year, chance check down, you know, when that's your mode of thinking, man, it's tough to get away from that when that's your mode of thinking and that's the way you learn.
Yeah, and I want to jump in real quick.
Go ahead, D-Will, real quick. I just wanted to say, I want to coin this term because you just said it. I was thinking about this on the way home because I knew you were going to nail like this. And I call it offensive stunting in terms of stunting of growth. And you saw that in Baltimore. And they finally realized, and when the Ed Reed comments came out, you know, Flacco came back at it. And you notice in the offseason they took it off. They said, little kid, we're going to run this no huddle. And they made that change. And you see that a lot. And I think Ryan comes up in that culture. He had a championship style defense. He had championship level defense when he came to the Jets because he put it together like that. And he had the best defense, and so he wasn't trying to do anything to put them in a compromising position. You know, he already had a championship style defense, and that happens a lot in that stunting of the offensive growth of the offense, and by effect, you're stunting the quarterback, and now you need him. And you haven't been developing him, and you haven't been putting talent around him like you've been trying to do on defense. Every time they had a problem on defense, they went out and got somebody.
Right.
When they had a problem on offense, they went out and who did they go out and get? They let Plaxico go.
Right.
That tells you what they talked about the weapons he needed.
And again, the formula is out there. It's not like the formula is like secret. I mean, I do it in franchise mode on Madden all the time. Draft a quarterback, get a receiver, get a running back.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If I play my cards right, I can do it all in one draft. You know what I'm saying? And that's the formula.
They got Ryan Julio Jones. Who did New York get Sanchez?
Right. You know?
The Ravens go out, they draft Torrey Smith, they get Anquan Boldin, they brought in Hushman Zada. They ran some guys through there to figure out who was going to work. They got the tight ends, Pitta and Dixon. You know, they brought cats in. And here's the other piece I think you have to think about when you think about today's NFL. In the NFL, it's really hard to be successful if the defenses are ahead of you. And what I mean by that is that Cam Newton, I think, is experiencing that right now. He had a great year. Now defensive coordinators, defensive teams have taken that and broken down all that film. And you have to stay ahead of your scouting report as a quarterback. Once defenses get a feel for what you're good at, they're going to take that away the next season. And they're going to force you to do the things that you aren't good at. And so if you're not constantly moving ahead of that, of your scouting report and what defenses know about you, and you're adding new wrinkles as a quarterback of things that you can do, and you're working on those weaknesses, and you're developing that rapport with your receivers, then your scouting report gets ahead of you. And once your scouting report gets ahead of you, it's hard to turn the tide because now you're only forced to do the things that you're not good at. And teams have a lot of tape of you messing up, and they know how to put you in compromising positions. And that's where Sanchez is. And I think you guys are hitting right on the head. The reason he's in that position where he's behind his own scouting report right now is because they handcuffed him. They handcuffed him so much when he came into the league. So he didn't get to make those mistakes on the fly. He didn't get to figure out defenses as they were figuring him out. You know what I'm saying? Because they limited his learning so much because they didn't put him in a position where he was figuring out the defense just as the defense was figuring him out. Because we all see it. When quarterbacks get thrown in there, new quarterbacks, you know, from Derek Anderson to Jeff Blakes to Ronnie Peaks throughout history, you see these guys come in and have one or two great years, and then the scouting report catches up.
Wow, right.
They can't do it no more.
And
they don't have that same level of success because the scout report catches up. And Sanchez, again, he got figured out before he figured things out. And if they figure you out before you figure it out, you're never going to figure it out.
James, I want to hit right on that. And what made Flacco turn the corner is the only way you can do that is you got to introduce something else. And so when they introduced Ray Rice, that caused a ripple for opposing defenses and allowed Flacco some space to do some things. Unless you interject something else like that for Sanchez that causes defenses to think differently about what the threat is, then he can't get ahead. But the way Baltimore countered that is by introducing a Ray Rice to the situation, and that created space for Flacco to grow because you had to pay attention to Rice.
Right, and then they got Torrey Smith who could take the top off the defense.
That's right.
Because they had Ray Rice, they had the receivers, and that loosened up Flacco a little bit, but it didn't quite knock the lid off the jar, if you know what I mean. It loosened it up, but it didn't quite pop it. And so then they had to, because they didn't have that speed receiver. They had Derek Mason, they had Boldin, they had Hushman Zada, who were all kind of over the middle, work the chains, possession type guys. They needed that one dude that could blow the top off and really open it up, and boom. Torrey Smith has developed into a very good receiver. He's effective at what he does. He knows his role. They put him in position to be successful, and now the defense has to be concerned with that, with a cat with 4.25 speed on the outside. So that's the other piece is that the Jets haven't invested in that. Sean Green's a plodding, decent, serviceable short yardage back. He's got that Leroy Horde, you know. You need 3 yards, I'm going to need 3 yards.
Oh, my boy Leroy from Michigan, that's my guy.
Yes. You need 1 yard, I'm going to get you 3 yards. You need 5 yards, I'm going to get you 3 yards. That's Leroy. That's Sean Green. That's Sean Green. So enough about the Jets. I want to talk about the Texans before we move on. We got the Texans, all right? This is Aaron Foster hitting on all cylinders. Matt Schaub doing his job. The defense is killing it. They still have a bullet to fire, in my opinion, this Texan team. They really haven't gotten Andre Johnson going yet. And when he gets going, oh, boy. And that's what you like to see with the team. I think the Texans are going to be very, very difficult to beat all season. Yes, we're taking a snapshot of week 5,
But I think this is going to be a team that's going to be tough to beat all season because there's still a dimension of this team that they haven't explored yet, and that's DeAndre Johnson piece. They really haven't had the – he hasn't had big games yet. They haven't needed him to have big games yet. At some point, they're going to see those eight-man boxes, those eight, nine-man fronts, and then you're going to start to see that other dimension should – open itself up as long as nobody gets hurt, which is, you know, I think the city of Houston is holding their breath, hoping that they can keep all these guys healthy long enough to really see this whole thing through.
Yeah.
What are your impressions of Houston right now, D-Will?
Well, I think all the things you said, I think what's going to have to happen with the Cushing injury is because you know the defense struggled when Cushing wasn't there. And so the thing about it is, are they going to continue to maintain when, you know, he's along with Watt, is the heart and soul of the defense. And because what's most impressive is not that we all knew about their offense, as long as they could stay healthy. But the reason why they were 8-8 is because the joke was the offense was 8 wins and the defense was 8 losses. And the defense is now in the way Phillips, a championship-style defense. And so can they overcome the loss of Cushing? It's something that, and I don't know if the report, but I think, you know, what they saw was ACL. So, I mean, I think, can they continue? I mean, he's all over the field. He's the heart and soul. And so, you know, if they can continue to maintain and play at that level defensively, and I think with Wade Phillips there as a coordinator, I think they can do. I mean, this team has everything. There's nothing that they don't do well. And so, and they showed it. Here, they just, in the way they beat you, and this is why the run game is so important, is when you get beat up when they can run the football on you, you know, Bill, you play defense. That's demoralized when people run on you.
Mm-hmm.
And you just like, you would rather for them to pass on you. It just don't feel so bad when they score on you like that. But when they run right through you, it takes something out of you. And Houston does that as well as anybody.
All right. Now, let's keep this conversation rolling, and let's talk about impressive performers. All right. So, who impressed you this past week, PhD?
Well, Arian Foster, man. I know he's done it before, but when you see him with 8-9 man fronts, man, and still getting 4, 5, 6 yards a pop, that's just so impressive. I mean, back to the previous point, Andre Johnson's struggling because, I mean, somewhat, I'm hoping it doesn't happen to Megatron. Side note, I actually traded Andre Johnson and a couple other guys for Megatron last week. But
Wait. Who else did you trade? Because That could be a get for you. Who else did you trade?
All right, so I moved Andre Johnson, Chris Johnson, and Vincent Jackson for Megatron and some other throw-in.
Oh.
And the thing was, Johnson and Vincent Jackson, they weren't getting off my bench. I was just so deep. So I just wanted to trade up, you know. But, yeah, sidebar. So I was impressed with him. Surprisingly enough, I was pretty impressed with Brandon Whedon, man, for the Browns.
not a fan.
Not here.
Well, you know, I like the kid he hooked up with, Gordon, or whatever his name is. I just think that the Browns are building something decent there. Yeah, I know they're 0-5. Keep the text messages and tweets away. I know, I get it. But I think they're building the right way. And,
that's right.
And Richardson is the real deal. He's the real deal.
Yeah, yeah, I love
it. And they've got a pillar in Thomas and the right tackle's decent as well. And so, man, they just have to put some things together. Hayden just got him back. DeQuell Jackson is a monster. Unfortunately, he got concussed. But those are the two teams that really impressed me And I got another one, but I'll save for my dog of the week.
All right. D. Wills, who was impressive?
I mentioned this earlier, and yeah, it was against Jacksonville, but I think they've been putting together these weeks as the Bears' defense. I've been saying for a long time, Lovey, where's your defense? And they got that energy and that swag about them right now. I mean, they broke an NFL record between Tillman and Briggs returning touchdowns, two against the Cowboys and two against Jacksonville. I just feel like their defense is playing well, and it's that balance. I mean, I think they got a great defense, and their offense is showing some explosiveness. So I like that Bears defense. There's something about them that I like, they impressed me.
Okay. My impressive performer for the week was Andrew Luck, rookie quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Andrew.
Going against reigning MVP Aaron Rodgers, and it got him down 21-3 at half, and the kid just kept doing his job. Just kept doing his job, kept his team in the game, kept making plays, kept making the throws he needed to make to keep his team going. That's a signature win for a young player right there. That's something that's an experience, that's a game that he's going to be able to draw on all year and into next year and build upon that experience of, you know, I took on the Packers, 15-1 team from a year ago, one of the best, if not the best quarterback in the league. He had me down. He had me and my team down 18 at half, and we came back and won on our home turf. That's going to be a signature win for him early. That is his signature win right now for him early in his career. So hats off to him. That's just a big move to make for a young guy, especially a young guy with a ton of expectation. So that right there is my impressive performer. With that said, we're going to transition into a new segment we got here, RSG. Let's get it.
How to plant onions.
Garden variety, big time. As you would say, onion.
Oh. All right, we got onions. All right, this is a segment of the Renegade Show where we make a bold prediction, two bold predictions going into the next week. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital, PhD. Give me your onions for week six.
Okay, so my onions... My big onion pick, man, is I like South Carolina against LSU this week. And I don't even think it's going to be close. I think that LSU is limited on offense, and South Carolina is very talented on offense. So that's my first onion pick. My second onion pick is I like Texas big against Oklahoma this week.
All right. So you got Texas is one going into Oklahoma or in the Red River Shootout, taking down Oklahoma. And you got South Carolina taking down LSU. That's going to be a huge game in the SEC. I'm going to have that on DVR. South Carolina's got a really good team. You know, for the running back out there, Marcus Lattimore, this is going to be a big game for him because that's the pro defensive line he's going against.
Yeah.
With LSU. So great onions for this week. D. Wills, give me your onions for this week.
Well, your boy stole my onion, the South Carolina pick. And the reason why is after I saw the Florida LSU game, South Carolina, I've never been the ball coach. It's been a slow kind of relationship between me and his South Carolina experience. But the way his defense is playing and the way they put stuff together, I think South Carolina going to LSU, I think they're going to win. And that's a tough place to play. So I will go at that with my first kind of onion pick. In terms of my other onion that I'm kind of putting out here, and I wasn't going to say that this is what I'm putting out, Stanford upsets
the Iris and South Bend.
And I'm with you on that. I didn't pick that as my onion, but I'm feeling that vibe. The Irish are due. This is usual. This is typical Notre Dame. You know, I'm not a gold domer by any stretch of the imagination. This is typical Notre Dame. They get into the top 10. They get everybody feeling like, oh, here come Notre Dame. And then they blow one. They blow one that they should win. And this Stanford game has the makings of that game for the Irish. We'll see how they do, though. So I like those onions. My onions for this week. My first onion, the NFL onion, and my first onion is after this weekend, there will be no undefeated teams in the NFL.
Wow.
None. No undefeated teams. That's my first onion. I know it's bold. Onions. All right, onion. I gotta get some audio on that, man. I gotta work that up. We just get a little onion, you know, Bill Raftery. My second onion for the week. The Orioles are gonna take down the Yankees. They're gonna take down the Yankees.
Oh, you're killing me! You're killing me, Mark.
They're gonna win that series,
man.
Onion.
I thought about that one.
Onions. That's a long-term onion, but that one's going to go beyond this week. But those are my onions. So at the end of week six, no undefeateds in the NFL. That means Green Bay is going to beat Houston on the road, and that means Oakland is going to beat Atlanta on the road. Onions. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Now, we gonna keep it rolling. We're going to keep it moving. And we're going to hit you with the dog of the week. Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital dog of the week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, so Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. This is where we bring you our ultimate performer. You know, we got impressive performers, but this is different. You know, this is that guy who really stepped it up. You know, we got the dog meter. This cat had his dog meter way up. I mean, all the way turned up. So with that said, D. Wills,
we need more dogs.
And I don't think I was on because I don't think I was able to do the dog of the week. I don't think I even said this one, but I have to say it even though it's a little delayed for me, is because I've been hearing all this discussion. But I got to give my boy Miguel Cabrera. You know, we're into the second season, but I don't think I had anything to say about the Triple Crown. But and I don't think I had it as my dog of the week. But I got to say something about that. It's 40 something years and. You know, I just got to recognize that. It's an amazing feat. All that war, all that other stuff you're talking about, Triple Crown is amazing. So
you're not a fan. You're not a fan of the detractors who are saying that he shouldn't win. He shouldn't win MVP, even though he won the Triple Crown.
Anytime you have something that hasn't been done in 40 years, at some point you got to throw all that other stuff out the window. I mean, if it wasn't that important, then somebody would have done it within 40 years, right? That's kind of how I go. I know RJ's probably scratching his head and looking at his calculator right now, but Hank is probably hugging me. But
like you say, he just threw his graphic calculator on the ground.
You know, 40 years, if it wasn't that important, it would have been done multiple
times.
His
TI-100. They just put a new battery in his TI-100.
Well, we didn't know. We was in high school. It was a TI-81. Wow, we didn't know.
Oh, yeah, you ain't lying, man. You ain't lying. You ain't lying. Ain't nothing you can do on the TI anything that you can't do on the iPhone. So play that one game that they got, the little spaceship game. Remember that?
Yep.
PhD, my man.
We need more dogs.
I'm going to throw some numbers out, fellas. 7 and 9.
Oh, he brought his calculator, too.
7 and 9. 6 and 10. 5 and 11. These were the records of the teams in the NFC West in 2010. They were the laughingstock of the NFL. They were the butt of every funny joke I had in 2010. But, yeah, they had a team that made the playoffs in 7 and 9. Right now, the NFC West, they're the only division in football in which every team has a winning record. The Cardinals and 49ers are sitting at 4-1, and the Rams and Seahawks are sitting at 3-2. The NFC West are my dogs of the week.
All right, all right. And, hey, again, I give you props because you're a year early, but you saw it coming. St. Louis. Nah, because I was in. I'm in with you. I'm not in on the Sam Bradford MVP thing. Okay.
Right. Clarify. A backhanded compliment.
Okay, let me clarify. I'm not in on that one. But everything else about the Rams, I like that squad. Jeff Fisher, I love him as a coach. You know, I think he just does great things wherever he goes. And as you can see, he's doing that in St. Louis. And they're getting it together. I am going with a member of the NFC West, a player in NFC West, Alex Smith. That was my guy last year. That I said, you know, he's not great. I'm not saying he's elite, but I'm saying he can get it done. And he's getting it done for San Francisco in a big way. And he's being solid. He's just doing what he needs to do. To call him a game manager is, you know, I think inaccurate. He can make a few plays. He's not Dilfer for the 2000 Ravens. That's not what he is. He's a little bit more than that, but he's also not Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger. He's not those dudes, you know. But he's good. He's better than Romo. He's better than Cutler right now. They have more talent. They have a higher ceiling. But he's playing better than those dudes right now.
And he put up 40 points. 40 points against me in fantasy this past week. 40. And I lost by 12. Last time I went up against Alex Smith, he gave me like a negative 12. He got sacked so many times, man, against the Ravens. He put up 40 points. Okay, I'm over it.
Hey, man, hey, this is dog of the week. You know how it goes.
Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
Hey, man, he's trying to be a dog. That's all. He's not trying to be no meow, no cats. You know, he's trying to be a dog. So that's the dog of the week. So now as we go into the shutdown mode, the music is coming on. We got the Biggie in the background. You know how we do. Hey, fellas, great show. Great show. All you live listeners out there, we about to shut it down. So for the shutdown this week, the shutdown is the show where we bring it into some brand of wackness that we see plaguing the communities, plaguing the streets, plaguing society. We call it to a stop for it. D-Wills, shut it down.
Shaq, stop hating. Come legit. Quit all that craziness with Dwight. Find somebody else to mess with. Stop it. Shut it down.
PhD, shut it down.
I'm shutting down Kobe early. I don't know if you saw him on media day. They asked him, whose team is it? You know, is it Dwight's team? Oh, no, it's my team.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's my team. It's my team.
He didn't hesitate either.
Right. Yeah, so I'm shutting down Kobe early. I'm shutting you down, man.
Oh man, he wasn't having that. I'm shutting down for this week, man. I am shutting down all of the running quarterbacks. Stay in the pocket, man. It's dangerous out there in the street. RG3 took a licking. Mike Vick took a licking. Cam, all you cats, man, y'all get outside that pocket, man. Keep your head down. Slide. Slide, brother. Slide. All right? We don't need no more y'all getting concussed. That's all we got. Real Sports Guys, RSG, Renegade Radio, realsportsguys.com. Signing off. Peace.